That's
Oh yeah, I forgot you know him as well, innit?
Yeah, he was our manager, yeah. I think we were the first.
He was awful.
Was he the first club?
But then you, I think but you again, the first club.
They sacked him and got Avram Grant in.
So it just got worse.
Yeah.
But I'm sure you either beat us that day or you drew or something.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
that was the last time.
We did get some good results under him. But I was always hearing stories like about how the players would be like, he was like the best player in training. And yeah. I remember thinking like, why can't this guy just be a player manager? Like, yeah. He was just like taking the mick out of our players.
Yeah, you get some coaches like that, like Glenn Hoddle, and like you're trying to coach average players. What?
Just embarrassing them.
Yeah.
You just take the ball down like this. You're not on the outside of your foot.
These times you're coaching Lee Cattermole and kind of players.
Yeah.
It's never gonna happen. Oh. It's never gonna happen. Right, it's headphones on, lads.
So the first month is gone.
Finally, yeah.
The year is well underway. Is it music hot in here?
It's hot. I'm on a while. I
can't hear anything in the headphones, though. Is it? Oh, maybe because not plugged in.
That's probably fine. Turn up minus, though. It's hot in here. Oi.
So Joel, did you take the weekend? 0-0?
What happened the weekend? Oh, Burnley. I mean, we'll do Arsenal in a week or two's time, but just briefly, I just think a little bit like Man United to some degree. I just want...
Oh, that's a big insult, you know. You're cussing yourself there.
Well, I've got to be brutally honest. I think in some respects...
Man United are higher on the table, though.
Oh.
But it's much of a much, isn't it? They'll lose two games, we'll win two games, and we'll be above them. Then we're both shit. Do you know what I mean? Mm. But I think, I wonder if Man United fans and Arsenal fans, and it's a question, it's not a statement, it's a question, if they just have to accept that this is the new era for both clubs. And, you know, as big a clubs as they are, they might have to accept that a point away at Burnley isn't a bad result.
I don't know.
As long as you beat Burnley at home, you get a point away. This is where teams are right now.
It's a big drop. That's a, you know, they say the mighty fall.
I don't know. Wow. Some would counter that and say, is that two big clubs dropping their standards?
It definitely is.
What? Or is it just two clubs being realistic? They're not very good.
Yeah.
Neither run very well. So is a 0-0 draw at Burnley an embarrassing result? I don't know.
It's not embarrassing.
I think you disappointing. Added, when it adds to all the other draws that you guys got, obviously it's just stacked up to another game that you haven't won, then in the bigger picture, as you said.
But in isolation, is a 0-0 away at Burnley the most embarrassing of results?
No, it's not.
In a way that
Burnley could be quite hard to go to generally. It's one of those, it's like what the Reebok used to be for Arsenal back in the day. Like it is one of those places that's kind of tough to go to. Do you remember when you guys used to struggle at the Reebok every time? Allardyce used to kick up your man. Wenger would always be crying about it. You don't remember those days. You must remember.
That's weird. The sound like went out of my earphones. I had sound. I could hear. And then...
Hang on. We'll be with you shortly. Right. You take those ones, sir.
Thank you.
You can all point the mics into your mouth rather than above or to the mic. That's really loud. Okay.
I'm going to plug these in, bro.
Hmm? There should be a box to by your knee.
Oh.
Get this I'm just seeing Zola there bending up about six Liverpool men in the corner back. So bad. Carragher getting ruined.
Go embarrass
himself.
Oh man.
Yeah.
All good.
Yeah, it's gone.
So what's happening, people? Welcome to this week's episode of the Football Fans Podcast. Don't forget, if you haven't by now, I'm nearly 5 years deep, so you should have by now. Subscribe to us here on iTunes and Spotify. Please do so. We're across all the socials as well, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Right, I'm joined on the show this week by a Chelsea fan, G, as usual, and West Ham fan, Dan. You two bucked up at Stamford Bridge, was it?
Yeah.
Somebody was running their gums and somebody ended up crying by the end of it as well.
Yeah, he was so confident. I mean, I wasn't as confident. But yeah, he was talking a lot.
Yeah, he was the most unconfident ever. Yeah.
I didn't see him after the game.
Did you look
enough.
For him though?
I was trying to look out for him.
Yeah, like, yeah. Right. You know, I was out of there.
He was there.
Did you leave about 87 minutes? You were out of there. Damn.
Even the stewards went missing. The stewards were talking to me before the game. They was like, Dan, we're going to smash it today. And I was like, I come back to the ground. I was like, right, where's that steward?
We're also joined by Spurs fan Joel. What are you saying, bro?
I'm good. How are you?
You well? I'm well. You well?
Yeah, I can't complain. Got a bit of a trap nerve, but hey, such is life.
Such is life.
Yeah,
that sounds more serious than it probably is.
Ah, it's painful, bro. I'm sitting in pain right now.
Serious?
Yeah, it's chronic, but it's what it is.
You sure it's not the pain of just being a Tottenham fan?
I mean, that's not.
That's actually
pain.
Not painful. I was actually at the last game, and that was sweet. That took my mind off the pain.
Did it? 90 minutes relief.
I just saw shots firing. You know what I mean? Could have been bad for the pain. You know,
it's only bad when they hit the back of the neck. When they hit the side, it don't matter.
we'll come to that game in just a little bit, right? We're going to get through so much on the show today, guys. And we're going to also have a chat later on briefly to friend of the show, Raphael Honigstein, to go through all things Germany and German related in and out of the Premier League. So we'll get to him just a little bit later on. But let's rattle through a few things I want to chat to you guys about. I want to start with England. And I want to find out from you guys who you think scoring the goals this summer's Euros. Because we know that Kane's currently out. Rashford's currently out. I personally think Kane is going to be a big doubt whether he even makes it, but they're saying that he will be back before the end of the season. Rashford, they're saying that they're more confident will be back before the end of the season as well. But if we put those two strikers to one side for a second, assuming that if they'll ever be injured or at best they'll be rusty going into the Euros, it's looking like, you know, you've got man in there like Abraham, Ings or Deeney could be leading the line for England. What do you think England's front line should be looking like, assuming those two strikers are, like I say, missing or severely rusty?
Well, if they get Tammy in there, they're in safe hands with Tammy, so we don't need to worry about it. So we can end this section.
And he's gone a bit quiet, though, Tammy.
Tammy has gone a bit quiet. And against Leicester, he was actually really poor, but he was playing on an injury. You could see like he wouldn't plant his foot at certain points and he was going for shots with the wrong foot and all that. So I won't judge him too harsh on that. What I would say, the risk with Tammy is maybe the same with Harry Kane and Rashford in that he might pick up a serious injury for the end of the season. This is now the second injury that we've kind of rushed him back from because Frank just doesn't trust the other strikers. Mm-hmm. And I think it could, in the long run, it probably will end up back. I think he'll get to the end of the season and be quite exhausted. So that could be a risk there. Vardy's never ruled himself out totally.
He has.
No, he ruled himself out of the squads. But he hasn't. But his retirement is kind of an indefinite thing where basically, if a tournament comes up, you can call me back in.
Okay.
So I think if those two weren't available, I think they made the call to Vardy. And I think Vardy would come if he thought that he was going to get a first team berth.
Do you think that's right, though? Because all the others have done all the, you know, the qualifications, the friendlies, all of that, all the training.
No time for emotions, no time for sentiment.
Yeah, but it's just like, what message does that send to the dressing room?
No, you know, I want to win. I agree. I don't think it's right. But then if it's that or Danny Ings, then you got to go to Vivaldi, right?
Come on, Ings is Scottish, isn't it?
I thought he was English.
No, he's Scottish. Yeah, I think he's Scottish.
Danny Ings is... Okay, keep talking.
Pretty sure he's Scottish.
Really? I never did either.
I thought he was English.
Well, he either is or he's both or he's...
I'll check that in a second. But so you would... Your plan B, providing Kane and Rashford were not there, would be to try and get Vardy out of retirement.
You get, and I think Vardy will come because otherwise you just say I retire, right? You don't say I retire indefinitely or I'm not available for squads at the moment. You know what I mean? So I think Vardy and Tammy would be fine. I think you've got a good two different types of strikers there, different And it's a shame that maybe Harry Kane has been so good for people like Vardy, because Vardy has actually done really well and it would be good to... I mean, I think you'd have to play to his strengths. You'd have to try to get the ball in behind a bit more and maybe a little bit less hold-up play. But I actually think he could be effective in certain games for England.
Dan, I mean, even if Kane is fit, does he is it a defo that he starts for England? Or would you be like, you know, boy,
yeah, you know,
we'll take you, but it's not a definite he walks in? Or do you think that even 70%
I mean, obviously,
you're starting him?
He has to be in the squad. Obviously, mm-hmm. he has to be in the squad. And like, if he hasn't, if he's not 100% fully fit, I don't think you shoehorn him into the side. And, you know, I still think the way he was at the World Cup, I think the way he performed, I think he just was performed poorly. I think he's got to go down as one of the worst golden boot winners of all time for that performance. I mean, he stat padded it with penalties and stuff like that, and I still can't forgive him for not squaring it to Sterling. So maybe if we get someone who can maybe play a little bit better with others, a bit less selfish in the side.
Oh.
And because I think Sterling's going to be one of the key man. We're talking about goals, obviously, as on the wing. Like,
he's not having a good season, to be fair, Sterling. Well, the last 3 or 4 months he's been poor.
I think
how many goals has he got?
Again, I'll check.
Paul is harsh, George. He's come a little bit off the boil.
How many goals has he got? Since November, he's been poor.
Poor?
He's been poor. I've watched him. He's poor.
Is this fantasy football hate or something?
No. Although I did take him out about a month ago. But no, I think he's been poor. But sorry, I'll let you finish.
Maybe by his standards, like, because obviously Man City haven't been up to their usual standards, you could say. But he's still, like, he's a quality player, and I think he's key to that England side. So yeah, I think he, obviously him on the wing, if you can get someone maybe that he can collaborate with a bit in the middle. But with England strikers, really, we haven't got much options. I mean, Rashford obviously is a little bit more versatile, so maybe you could look at a Rashford who can link up.
Well, England has won England cap.
He's English, yeah.
He must have some, I'm sure he's got some Scottish thing in him. There's definitely, or unless
great,
I've just lost my marbles.
He's great, great,
but
friend.
If he is English, which I believe you, he is. Let's say he is, because he is.
I mean, Google says he is. So.
Google's never wrong. Ings is been in great form for
a
Southampton. Yeah, but think about it, like him. He sort of carried that Southampton team on his back for the most part. Obviously, they've got a few good players there, but to actually, you know, do it at Southampton, score goals. Even at Liverpool, it was only his injuries that really, if he didn't get injured,
I do like him.
He'd still be leading the line for Liverpool.
I'm not sure he's the answer, but I do like him. Joel, for you, is it a case of if Kane is 70% fit, he starts? Or would you have reservations about that? And kind of what G said there, do you change the system if you haven't got a number nine fit? Because I'm tempted to think if you don't have Rashford or you don't have Kane, I would change the system.
Yeah, that's one thing that Southgate's been quite flexible with, though, right? The system. Mm. I don't think that he would mind doing that in order to accommodate different tactics, different personnel. I think it depends who's fit. But if Kane is fit, he should go. How fit determines if he plays.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Tammy and Rashford, really. See where they are, innit? And if Vardy comes out of retirement, then that's an option. I think we'll be all right. I think we'll have enough potency up front to worry teams if they're fit. It's whether they're in form or not will determine if we go anywhere in that competition, to be honest.
And do you think, just on the system kind of point, I would be tempted, rather than trying to replace a Kane or a Rashford with an Ings or with another out-and-out centre-forward, would you entertain the idea of maybe having a really fluid front four whereby you don't have an out and out striker, so you might have like a Grealish playing a false nine or an Ali playing a false nine, or even a Calvert-Lewin who people will laugh at,
not me,
because he's not a goal scorer,
yeah.
But if you can get someone that can, Sancho can play off, Sterling can play, so you get your goals from maybe behind Calvert-Lewin, is that something that you would look into? So you keep the system.
G made a point about Lampard not trusting his other strikers, but he wouldn't sell Giroud to Tottenham, would he? Right? Mm. And that's the type of striker you're talking about, who might not be your potent goal getter, but everyone can play off of him and he'll make others look good and chip in with his own himself. So do we have that type of player? Not sure if Calvert-Lewin's as good as Giroud.
Antonio.
He's won a World Cup.
We're talking about Antonio until the game. I'm saying, no, listen.
I don't think we can play Antonio up front on his own and expect, well, I wouldn't ask him to do that job. I don't think he's operating at a level of high enough quality week in, week out. I think he looks good for West Ham, as does Deeney for Watford. But I don't think just because they ply their trade in the Premier League, that would mean they'd transfer that form onto an international stage. I think that would be throwing them in at the deep end, personally, especially asking them to play up front. If you're going to bring those kind of players into the team, then do so and find a couple of positions that they can operate in and make sure they get the games before the major tournament without having to wait till we get there to have a look at them. I hope Tammy's fit because I think that he could really prove the right foil if Kane doesn't make it and grow. I think that Lamps has handled him. I'm not sure if I like the way he's handled him.
Tammy?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think at the beginning of the season it was arm around his shoulder and these boys and the young generation and blah de blah de blah. And then somewhere along the line it turned. I don't know if the pressure got to Frank or if he's punching above his weight in terms of where he is at the moment and where he expected to be, given it's his first season. But the tone that he talks about these Tammy and the younger players, not all of them, one of them gets away with it. I won't mention it, but
Mason Mount.
Yeah.
as in he's not been good.
He's been involved in a few misdemeanors off the pitch, yeah, okay. And he's. Yeah, his character, nothing. It's rosy. And I just know that if he looked like Tammy, it wouldn't have been the case. Mm. But that aside, I think that the younger players, especially Tammy at Chelsea, need that arm around their shoulder rather than being hung out to dry. And I'm not saying he's done that in a horrible manner. I just think the tone of which he talks about the expectations he has from his strikers is changing. And that's in a pretty quick, you know, period of time, given I think Tammy's got what 12 Premier League goals.
For 13 Premier League goals, 15 goals overall.
So if he scored another seven in the next 13 games, which is not insurmountable, he could finish the season on 20 goals, return in your first full season.
The tone definitely has changed. Although I wonder whether it's an attempt at man management rather than to hang him out to dry. I totally hear what you're saying and hear it from the outside, but watching Tammy play every week, my one criticism of him is sometimes he doesn't seem hungry enough.
No, he's not a killer.
He's not.
He's no Drogba.
Yeah.
He's no Costa.
Yeah.
He's not the type of striker that you're used to.
Yeah.
And so I understand the frustration and I get where you're going with the man management thing, but I don't think that that's the way for him now.
You don't think that's the way for him?
No. And listen, it's Premier League, cutthroat, top four. Listen, I can see Frank wants to keep that job. He's not about, you know, aligning his... he's not pledging his allegiance to these players. You know, you do the job or you got to go. Mm. And he's been unrelenting, been talking about needing another striker. Mm. I just find it interesting that he's got one that scored over 100 goals for Arsenal and he won't use him.
Just just on
34 years old though, isn't it?
Like, doesn't matter. You use him this season at least, or sell him. You know what I mean? Because Batshuayi, he's not good enough. Don't get me wrong, but he's a lot younger and he's not getting a game either. So what is it?
Just on Tammy as well. I'm wondering. Everyone knows that I've not been his biggest supporter
of the season.
He had a very good first half of the season for sure. And I just wonder, maybe this is a little bit kind of fanciful, but the fact that a South London link-up could possibly work with the likes of Sterling, Sancho and Tammy up front, and you get a kind of group of young English boys that know each other, have played with each other through the system. Could that be a route for Southgate to kind of play on? These guys that maybe... Okay, Tammy's not going to... He's not a Lewandowski. He's not going to scare many defenders, but playing in that unit, is that an option possibly for England in terms of having that kind of chemistry between three or four players that know each other, like each other, and in their own ways are on some decent form?
Yes, and I think they've all kind of played in academies or England at younger level, and there is a bit of a chemistry there. And you can see it between, and not just with the attackers, but even with some of the midfielders, and you know, like Mount and Rice and all this type of thing. There is chemistry in the younger groups, which is what I think.
What you might lack in quality, you might make up for in team spirit.
In chemistry and camaraderie, exactly. Which is what they were trying to build, I guess, to a certain extent when they did St. George's Park, as well as the technical aspect of it. Mm-hmm. Build up teams who have kind of come together and grown up together and kind of know how to play in tournaments together, and that's what a lot of these young players have had the chance to do. With that said, I don't think that's enough to win a tournament.
No,
it could be a good substitute if you had a player injured.
Just a bit of experience in there, I think, mixing a bit of that.
But who? Who's that forward that's going to... Do you know what I mean? So I'm just thinking, you don't... If Kane aside, and yep. Kane's not the most experienced of players...
Well, he hasn't won anything, has he? Like,
and
no
there's that...
The truth is the truth.
If you had someone... This is the thing with England.
I was trying to be serious for a second there, man.
So what? No one don't remember the Addy Cup, no.
I still remember the pictures and the celebrations.
And just going back to the final point, Dan, to Frank Lampard's management. Kepa. What have you made of the fact that he dropped him last week? And, you know, it seems like, from what I'm hearing behind the scenes, he's not convinced about Kepa as a top-level quality goalkeeper. And also, I don't think he's having him in terms of his attitude as well. Do you think that he's handling that situation correct as well?
Well, I mean, I saw him against Arsenal and he didn't look that convincing to me. But at the same time, it's a tricky one because... You know, if that's your best option, and we're not even near the flipping transfer window now, if you might end up having to need Kepa, and if you just completely kill his confidence altogether, that could be a disaster. But
that's where it went wrong for you, isn't it? Your keeper.
Yeah, keeper-wise, it was... well, we had Roberto, which was, you know, a little
no,
bit
I mean,
than
I mean,
Kepa.
Literally, losing Fabianski, not...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, we lost Fabianski, and yeah, we...
That
we
was had, where it went wrong.
We had
I mean,
Roberto.
Everything that's come after that.
And it was the other guy who made his debut against us. And
yeah, David Martin. And kept a clean sheet, yeah. This guy. Yeah.
That was a really great story.
That was brilliant. Oh, yeah, he pretty much run the show at Stamford Bridge. That was brilliant. His first ever Premier League game. Yeah.
Just briefly, G, what have you made of the way that he dropped? Do you think it's just a drop in and a kick up the bum, or do you think there's something deeper going on here and he's trying to ensure the club somehow move him on in the summer?
So I think if I was Lampard, especially in the short term, it would be a kick up the bum, and I hope that's what it is, because you saw Caballero against... Sorry, I said his name. I messed up his name there.
Caballero
against Leicester, and he didn't look any better. In fact, he looked worse. And I think the thing is with the way that Chelsea play is, despite Kepa being so bad, kind of from a shot-stopping perspective, he actually still plays a good part in our ball retention, which is a big part to where we play. Like, Leicester was our lowest possession stat this year. And I don't think it's any coincidence that when Caballero played that we got that, because it got to a certain point where, and even against Hull, where the teams push high, and then Caballero can't play, so he kicks it long, and then the ball comes back again. So I think in terms of the way we play, even we have to almost bite the bullet in some of Kepa's mistakes, maybe hope he gets better, so that we can have a ball-playing goalkeeper.
It's crazy we're talking like this, because I remember 6 months ago, like, Chelsea fans were talking him up there, like, he's on, like, Alisson and De Gea level, like, as one of the best...
I've never been convinced about
best keepers in the league, and now
I think he's a
good one thing I would say, in terms of the kick up the butt, last season, when he did that whole thing where he refused to be substituted...
Yeah,
I was there too. He was dropped for the game against Tottenham, which was also a big game. But then he came back in after that,
and his
form improved.
Yeah, it was.
So I really hope that maybe Lamps is looked at what happened last season and thinks, you know, we got now a winter break finally. 2 weeks.
2 weeks to get your head right.
Get your head right. But am I convinced that's the short term? Am I convinced
he's a Premier League winning goalkeeper?
For the long term, I haven't seen it yet.
Okay, got to move on. Something else I wanted to kind of briefly ask you guys as well. I was thinking about this on the way here, actually. New signings. I heard it. You laughing for?
I'm just thinking about Garner.
we'll get there. Just save it. New signings, guys. When you're a new signing, who support do you think a new signing needs the most in order of these three? Do you think it's important that a new signing gets support of his teammates, the fans, or the manager? Because this was triggered. I heard a conversation today with the guys talking about your new boy, your left winger at Spurs, Joel.
And, Steve.
Yeah. Mm.
Stevie B.
And there were some guys talking about, they were talking about basically when you score on your debut, how the fans get behind you straight away. And that's the single most important thing for a new signing. And it got me thinking, I'm not sure about that. And I was thinking, I want to know from you guys who you think's support is the most important thing as a new signing. So I'll start with you, Dan. You've just been signed by West Ham. You're the new hot number 10 attacking midfielder that's been brought in from Spain.
Yeah.
Everyone's talking about you're the big new signing. whose support is the most important to you? Your fellow teammates, the manager, or the fan base?
It's the players, for me, without a doubt. Without a doubt, because the players are going to be the one that help you settle into the team, make you feel comfortable, make you feel welcome and feel part of the team. I always hear about how great Mark Noble is, obviously, as the captain, at just welcoming players and making them feel like they've just already been part of the family. Like, for ages, he's really good at helping players, you know, bed into the team. So I think that's massively important. Like, one of the first moments, you know, first bits of support that you get is from the players before you even kick a ball. So that's what I'd say.
The G?
Yeah, I would say the players, the manager, and then the fans. I would actually think that in an ideal world, it would be the manager. And I guess in the Ferguson days, it would have been the manager. But nowadays, I think, unfortunately, players can do so much to influence things that managers just don't have the power over. So, I mean, I hear all the time about, I mean, at Chelsea, for instance, we've had two Spanish strikers who haven't done well, in Morata and Torres. And both of them have quoted that they didn't feel that the rest of the dressing room trusted them, or they didn't feel that the team played to the rest of to their strengths. I mean, whether they would have done well or not, I don't know, because they haven't done well elsewhere either. But I think it really is important. And plus, like, if I'm a manager and I see that this new signing doesn't have chemistry with five or six of my big players, I've got to still go with five or six of my big players, right, to make it work. I can't just force them to have chemistry with one player. So I think getting on with the players and having the support of the players is crucial. Then the manager, then the fans, because as much as the fans go either way, if everything goes well with the other two, then the fans will be on your side.
Joel, do you agree with the guys that if you're the new player, having your teammates backing you is more important to you as a new signing than the manager backing you? Because maybe could we know some examples where, yeah, so an example where the manager hasn't been the one that signed the player.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So if you've been brought in and you know example. That the manager, you're not his guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you not need to get him on board first? Because you need to play.
Yeah, it's like who signed Pepe, isn't it? No, no, we'll get to that. But what I'm
on installments.
I don't know if we will, you know. But
so I feel you still. I understand. I don't know. I mean, I use the Pepe. No, actually, Liverpool haven't got that. They signed along. Is it? I don't want to say Japanese. Is it Japanese?
Yeah, he's Japanese. Yeah.
He's not there yet, though, is he?
No, he's there.
Is he coming? Is he coming?
He signed him just before the January window.
So, cause my thinking is this, isn't it? Like with Stevie B, for instance, it was no surprise to me that Son, and I don't remember if he was the closest player, but Son, him and Son had a little sharing of, you know, a moment when he scored. Mm-hmm. You know, because I felt like Son could relate to the new guy, mm-hmm, coming in, mm-hmm, and he did all he could. So I think the players have got a rob. I think it's a manager, you know.
You've been brought in. The first person who support you need,
I think
the manager.
So. Because if you impress him, you play. And if you play, you win and you play well, you win the respect to the players. So it will come. With the players, it will come. And I guess it all depends if you've got links there at the club, innit? If you're Dutch, is there any Dutch players there? Does anybody speak? Like, who did we sign? It was the club record at Tottenham. Ndombele. All right? Mm-hmm. He's coming and not too many. He doesn't speak English. All right? So it doesn't matter if, in this instance, it doesn't matter if him, Poch loves him to the bone. Poch can't get to him in the way that Sissoko can. Mm-hmm. In the way that Serge can. All right? Mm-hmm. So it's no surprise to see that those two players, he gravitates to them. They look after him. They help him interact into the rest of the team. It's nothing to do with Poch, is it? Right? Mm-hmm. But in the sense of, like, you know, the peps and stuff, mm-hmm, you might need it to be the manager, innit? Who's given you the nod, and then you get on the pitch and do your thing, and then the manager like, okay, cool, you can play. Mm. And they work you out off the pitch slowly. So a combination of both, if anything. But initially, for me, it's the manager.
It's funny you mentioned Pep, actually, because I remember, I don't know if you were on the show a couple of years ago when Sterling first signed for City, and Ollie was talking about, he personally wasn't convinced that Sterling would cut it at City, but he was also saying that Sterling's problem might be that he's in a dressing room with title winners with a £50 million price tag, and your Agüeros and your Harts and your Yayos are looking at this guy thinking,
yeah, really?
I don't know about you, you know. Mm. And since we know what he's done, he's proved himself one of the main men there now. But it was interesting that Ollie made that point that for Sterling, he had to prove to his teammates that just because I'm 21 or whatever he was, and I come with a big price tag, I know you lot are all champions. Mm. I'm of the level. Just give me a little time, and he won them around, it seems. Yeah. And Pep persisted with him as well.
But at the same time, you have a captain as well that should be welcoming everyone. Like, if you know, right, this kid's young, he's 21, he might have something to offer. Of course, he might not have won all the titles and that, but we want to make him feel like he's part of the family, like he's part of the team, and not put that pressure on him and relieve that pressure and just make him feel like he belongs, basically.
That's a good captain.
Yeah, that's what the captain's job is. I mean, I don't know who the captain was at the time. Sterling signed, I can't remember.
Company. It'd have been Company.
Company, yeah. Yeah. So that would have been, Company's job to go and do that, you know. So if you've got a good captain, that's what we're doing. So
after job done, isn't it, really?
Yeah, that's it. That's what it is.
But then I say, you know, people will say that we have this debate regularly, like whether Steven Gerrard was a good captain.
I was just going to say, because there was the whole Gerrard
and Elhaj Diouf.
Elhaj Diouf, that's right.
Yeah, Diouf said that Gerrard never liked him from day one. And he said that he played. Now, again, that's taken, if you take Diouf's words for gospel, but at the same time, he said that affected the rest of the group. So the people who like Gerrard stay behind Gerrard, which is pretty much everyone.
The whole club.
Yeah. I mean, he was left out, isolated. Mm.
Gerrard was an institution, though. I'd imagine that would be like landing at Chelsea when Frank and John Terry were.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So
they're bigger than captains.
Yeah, it's hard if that happens, but not hard to believe that our one didn't like Diouf, though. It's not really that hard to believe, is it?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Hard to believe.
No. It's not.
No, it's not. I'm with you. Brian, before we get to our first topic, another final thing. You mentioned Pep there as well. Start with you, G. We'll develop this a bit more, I think, next week, because I want to get a City fan on to talk about this a bit more. But is Pep getting off the hook a little bit?
Good question, Jordan, actually.
Is Pep getting a little bit of a bly?
Yeah.
22 points.
Yeah, but I'm modern.
No one said about that.
By modern reactive standards.
No, don't try.
No,
not modern reactive standards.
He's
the champion of the Premier League.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be the best manager on the planet.
Yeah.
He has all the resources, the money that he wants and needs.
Yeah.
He's 22 points behind the.
But George, when has that ever meant that you win every year?
No, I'm not saying he should win the title. I'm saying, is he off the hook because he's 22 points behind the champions?
He's off the hook because he's got good credit in the bank. Yes. And he's deserved that credit in the bank, to be fair.
22 points.
He's 22, but like Liverpool are just, you know what I mean? They haven't lost a game all season.
See, people say that, Dan. I want to pick up on that point. The fact that Liverpool are almost perfect at the moment doesn't impact City.
Well, no, but it means that basically
kind of. No, it doesn't.
No, but then City have to be almost perfect or be, you know.
No, they don't. Just be better. Not 22 points behind. How about 8 points behind?
It's
how about 10 points behind?
But Jordan, it does get to a certain point where, like,
they've drawn one game.
It does get to a certain point where you kind of think it's over now. And like the heads go down and stuff like
that. That's his job as manager to stop not let that happen.
It's hard.
We hear about the Pep standards.
It's hard to motivate when you've got nothing to actually physically pay for. And for a look, and George, you've been saying it's been over since November.
I have, but I'm not paid £10 million a year to motivate 25 players.
But look at this, you have the Champions League as well. Everyone keeps saying that, okay, yeah, he's won the Premier League. They've won it back to back under Pep. He needs to win them Champions League. That's what they want. They're still in the Champions League, right? So maybe that's the situation. Because you know what? The league's done. Let's put all our energy into the Champions League.
He could just about admit it, that Liverpool had won it after in the press conference.
Oh yeah, he didn't want to say it, did he? Like,
he didn't want to say it.
He nodded his head.
The journalist had to ask him to say it.
He said, can you say it because I can't quote it in the head.
I was sitting behind him in bits, but it was the only journo in the room that put it on him like that. But Pep doesn't respond well to the notion of
defeat.
No, just looking as bad as he is right now.
Do you think he's embarrassed?
He doesn't respond well. I couldn't speak on what he feels. I can only say that he does not respond well in this situation. He expects to win. But it was interesting listening to Jose, you know, the Don that is Jose.
Oh, wow.
Don Jose, yeah.
Right.
we'll get there.
Beforehand, he spoke before Pep came in, because Pep had us waiting for 45 minutes. Before he came in, he said, it's hard to win 3 on the trot, man.
No doubt.
It's hard to win 3 on the trot. And I just think that that's where we are. You know what I mean? Pep's finding it difficult to motivate a team. And he's being chased by a Liverpool side that was chasing him for the back end of that last season. Mm-hmm. They was on him. They had to win, 14 on the spin? their last 14 games of the season in order to win the league by 1 point. Mm. That's what Liverpool were. And Liverpool ain't stopped. They've literally just carried on. That momentum is just there, and Pep ain't been able to find the wind in those sails for a third season running.
So do you agree with the boys here that he's kind of got enough credit in the bank to give him one year?
I don't believe in credit in the bank. It's a results business we hear. Mm-hmm. That's what we hear. Mm-hmm. So if he doesn't find any results, you know, that you can look at the amount of money he's spent and say, well, he should win a trophy every year. I don't care who they are. They spend that type of money. They should win a trophy every year.
But sometimes, even though you say 2 years on the trot, you win a trophy, sometimes you have to look at and say, like, okay, this is a blip year. Let's learn from it. How can we rebuild for the next year?
No, because you can't. That's a luxury. Yeah, I totally agree.
Look at Man United, though. They weren't winning back in their heyday, Premier League title, year after year after year after year. They'd have a year where they'd let you guys come in and you'd win it instead.
They'd let you, though.
Yeah. I know. No, you know what I mean?
Like, you with a cognitive shade.
You know
what
I mean? Let you. Then,
here you go, have one. Let's make it interesting.
We feel sorry for you.
I'll take your point.
But no one was talking about, like, listen, he ain't won it this year. Arsenal won it this year. Should they get rid of Fergie?
No. I'm not saying he should be sacked, and I'm not even saying that he should be criticised for not winning the league.
No, he should be called out for his lack of achievement.
I'm just saying no one's brought up the fact that they're so far behind. We're focusing on Liverpool being so far ahead, but with that, it's like, well, hang on a minute, who's second? When United came second under Jose 3 or 4 years ago, I killed him. Because for me, it wasn't United came second. United came top of a different league.
Mm. Mm.
And it's the same thing. So if you're Pep Guardiola with that Man City squad, you can't be that far behind. You can't. I'm not hearing anybody bring that up.
He did make a point about saying that when they did that...
the Scudamore.
There was someone made a point about the fact that that shouldn't never happen again in football, especially in the Premier League.
It was Scudamore.
And here it is happening all over again.
Yeah.
Listen, man, I just think it's a combination of... the amount of money that City has spent and what we expect from them, given they've spent that money, no long, no short. And the fact that Liverpool are so good this year. So good, bruv.
They're virtually perfect.
You know what I mean? You can't knock them. So I think that's magnifying everything in 22 points. Just makes you look really poor. But it makes everyone look really poor, though.
But not everyone has those resources.
True,
and finances.
But not everyone finished that far behind the winners. Yeah. In previous seasons, so.
I don't think the resources and finances argument really matters. Really, I think everyone who calls themselves in the Big Six should be ashamed of what's happened this year. Even Chelsea, despite this, I was saying to you downstairs, Dan, even despite this like transfer ban and all that, there's no way you should be so uncompetitive and so poor and like week in week out, everyone else apart from Liverpool is dropping points where they shouldn't be dropping points.
Agreed.
Everyone should be ashamed of himself. So maybe that's a part of the reason why Pep is getting away with it, because no one else is really kind of putting their head above and doing well, apart from maybe Leicester, who you say are overachieving.
If he wins the Champions League, do you change your tune? Do you say...
I think if you win that tournament there...
If he wins the Champions League, I think he can say the season has been a success. But I still don't. The reason why I say I'm still critical is because I just feel if you're that manager of Manchester City and you're Pep Guardiola, whatever happens elsewhere, being 22 points, Dan.
Yeah.
And I take G's point that we should all be holding our heads in shame. Yeah. We've all been... You know,
well, we've all contributed to that.
We have. They've got one of the greatest strikers of all time. They've got one of the best goalkeepers in the world.
No, that striker, though, hasn't been... He's been injured a few times this season.
Pep knew this. We know that Aguero gets injured.
And I think with Jesus hasn't really taken as well as people thought he would, like, stepped up to the point where people thought he'd be, like...
I think he's been
like,
okay.
But he hasn't been, like, you know, like what he showed early on, where it's like, wow, this guy could
You'd
really
be surprised, Daniel. Look at his stats this and last season, because we don't see him very often. Mm. We kind of think that. But if you look at his stats... That's a very, very strong.
So where's it gone wrong for him then?
Well, this is what I wanted to ask you guys finally. Mm. And what do you think he's going to do?
Mm.
Is he going to do a madness and just bring in five men and be like... Because I think he's embarrassed. You're embarrassed, you tend to lash. And I think the equivalent of lashing would be 300 million, I'm dropping it this summer. Boom, 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 boom.
I mean, they've got the money to do that. I don't know, because I don't think you get any props for that. If you, we expect them to do that, and then they say, you bought it again. Because when you didn't buy it, look what happened. They didn't really spend no dough, really, did they?
No.
Right? They let Man United spend the dough.
Rodri was only, I think Rodri was the only player they came
with. Yeah, right? But who's it? Like, anyway, so my thing is this. At the back, it's a shambles. Then no one's saying it. It's a shambles. Mm-hmm. For a team that's got as much attacking prowess as they have, they shouldn't be leaking as many goals as they do. And you look at that back five, and you're not quite sure who the strongest outfit is. Well, I'm not, anyway. Mm. Not this season, you know? And John Stones...
They have one good defender, as far as I'm concerned.
Who?
Laporte.
Yeah.
He's the only good defender they have in that squad.
So they're struggling back there, mate. They're struggling back there. And I think teams know that you can get at them.
But then City have always... I mean, they've had company on and off because he's been injured, but they've always gone through, you know, there's been periods in City's season where they've had to pay Fernandinho at centre-back or had no natural centre-back at all and still found ways to win. I think you don't characterise how good City are by the centre-backs they have. It's more about how whether they work as an attacking unit. So, like, if they score the chances that they have yesterday at Tottenham, it don't matter who they've got in the back, really. And I think that's what needs to be refined.
You say that, but if they don't score...
If they don't score, it's a disaster, isn't it?
It's not just a disaster, but it shouldn't be such a... What, like, it shouldn't be...
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Fall apart.
Yeah, it shouldn't be that.
But that was like Pep under the first season, if you remember.
Yeah,
like,
but then they bought Kyle Walker and they addressed that because people were just playing the ball over the top, right? And that's what nipped that in the bud. But we've worked it out now.
But I speak to a lot of...
And this is what I'm...
I speak to a lot of Tottenham fans and they tell me that Kyle Walker isn't the best defender. Maybe you're telling
me...
No.
I'm not saying that he's the best defender. The problem was... And this is speaks to the way that they play. You said if they score goals, and that's fine because they swarm teams, right?
Yeah.
They play with a 7-second tiki-taka. It's all, we know the philosophy. Get the ball back. When we've got the ball, teams can't hurt us.
Yeah.
But if they don't score the chances,
yeah,
teams are knocking it over the top.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it's turning that basic defence and it's giving other teams opportunities to... And I'm not sure... I mean, listen, they're going to score goals. There's always goals in them. But if they're not scoring, if they're not hitting the back of the net,
they're
then...
in big trouble.
Yeah, you can get at them, man. And I think also what speaks on the league this year, I think Sheffield United are doing what Wolves done last season, right? And those two teams, because Wolves are still doing it. They're back in the same position they were last year. And that was the year after they got... So a lot of people were like, wow, what, they're doing really well. And I think those two teams, they epitomise an improvement in standards in the middle order of the Premier League, and that's for me why a lot of results have gone awry.
Okay, right. So let's keep you talking now, because Tottenham win a game. on
you said that with so much love,
and all of a sudden my phone's ringing off from Tottenham fans. Ollie's texting me all of a sudden. Troy Townsend's texting me all of a sudden, and the gentleman to my left over the table here is texting me, piping up now.
Yeah.
Oh wow,
we got to talk though, man. We got to talk. It was a great result.
So I was like, you know what? I'm a fair man. I do get you one when you get battered. So you know, as I'm a fair man, you did win the game
through gritted teeth.
We did.
Mate.
You've done well.
And what made it worse was that you were hailing Jose. What just fill the listeners in with what you text me as soon as the final.
I text you because the last time I was on this show, you and I had a discussion about whether young players would come.
Yes.
To play for Tottenham, to play for Jose, and his first two signings were 22-year-olds. Mm-hmm. Young?
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Same age with Eriksen, 6.5 years
Well,
ago.
he did say the top young players.
The best young players in Europe.
No, he said, all right, cool. Right, that's fair enough, but I mean, there wasn't a queue for my man.
Was it Stevie B?
There wasn't a queue for Lucas Moura. There weren't a queue. I don't care about queues.
That pertains to the point of how good they are.
No, it doesn't. It means that their agent's good and there's a lot of hype around them. Doesn't necessarily mean that they're in kind of quality. Where was the queue for the last young player?
Haaland.
Mbappe?
Haaland.
What queue was that? Because we weren't in that.
There's a reason for that as well.
What's the reason? How much did he go for?
Oh, God, what did he go for in the end?
Haaland, he went for like under 20 million.
How much?
Under 20 million, but the agent's fees were crazy, apparently, in the background. But I think it was like 17 million.
See, that's what I'm saying. We could have spent that. We would have been in that conversation.
But would he want to go to Tottenham is the point, under Jose?
Don't know. All I know is that two young players have come, right? One of them took a pay cut, Stevie B, right? Could have gone Barcelona when he was 12. Did you know that, Jay?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they wanted him. They wanted to move the whole family there. He's been on the books. They tried to seduce him with Messi. The dad said no. Tottenham are building a stadium. Tottenham are building a stadium. And you're gonna I've seen it. You're gonna score with your first shot on target in your first game against City. Listen, the guy has got young players in. They're performing.
Just as you're talking over your head,
the results. Yeah, that's great. The results have been decent since he's got there. I think the team's adapted to the philosophy of play.
So you're happy?
I'm happier than I was when Poch was in charge.
Serious?
Well, yeah. this season, yeah.
Okay, this is okay.
But I look at the results and people say like the results are pretty much parallel, right? It hasn't really.
No, they're not parallel.
Well, they are. I think he's won one more game than Poch this season.
Yeah, I mean, how many games has he been in charge? 13, 14?
No, but the output I'm talking about. Like, I think he deserves more time. But in terms of,
I don't think you can compare it. I think the results have got better. We're in a better position than we were under Pochettino when he left on November the 19th, whenever it was. We're in a much better position now. It was interesting to see that we bought two players in the transfer window, got rid of Danny Rose, who said he wasn't going to go anywhere. I don't know why he did that. Why did he do that, Jay? Do you know?
Why did he want to move?
Why did he say he's not going nowhere and then leave to go to Newcastle? It's a bit silly, wasn't it?
Well, I think that he thought there would be more clubs in for him than there was.
Mm.
And then I think when Newcastle came in, I think he probably, I'm just doing a lot of thinking here, but I'm assuming he might have thought, well, am I going to get an offer from a bigger club than Newcastle?
Mm. Mm. I think they're on the border being taken over as well, so it could be a good move in the end, you never know.
Is it a permanent or is it a loan?
It's a loan, but it'll be. I mean, if he does what he's got to do, it'll be my payment. He's not coming back to Spurs, that's for sure.
Yeah, no.
When he said he's not going anywhere, wasn't Pochettino in charge as well?
Yes.
And that probably, you know, Pochettino probably had a conversation saying, nah, you're my man, you look good. I mean, next week he's sacked.
I can't wait for the Amazon documentary, the special that's being made.
When's it coming out?
I don't know. I think end of the season probably, if they're smart, when we qualify for the Champions League over Chelsea. You heard it here first.
Is your one coming out before the United documentary?
I'm not sure.
Wait, this is legit. It's not a joke. I thought you were joking.
No. It's got everything on it. The docu, the sacking, the everything's on that. It's going to be amazing.
But there's got to be a story. So you sack him. Right, you bring in Mourinho. To me, the only way it becomes worthwhile watching is if you win something.
It's worthwhile watching
when they don't win.
Yeah, all right.
When teams fail, not just Tottenham.
That's the joy for us.
I'll describe that.
I was on just for that.
You want to see another one when we do win? That's what I get.
What's the sequel?
I get it. Makes it more money. Typical.
Those DVDs come like every 30 years.
Right, listen, we can make them more frequent if you want.
Dan, what have you made of Jose's start so far? And do you think that they will win something under him? And, you know, Joel makes the correct point that the two signings have both been young-ish so far.
Young.
Are you sensing that he is changing his ways, or do you think that...
And brought Jaffet. Sorry, I didn't put that in there as well.
Or do you think that he will eventually revert to type?
You know, when he went to Man United, obviously there was a lot of talk about him changing his ways and things like that, becoming a new Jose, and he ended up reverting to what he was. I think if he is going to win something at Tottenham, I think he'll need time. I don't think you're going to see it next season even. Maybe if he can be like the third season and he gets that time.
Wow,
but
that's a long time.
That's a long time, but look, you know, like before they had Pochettino, how long was Pochettino the manager?
5 years.
5 years. So I think it's a big job, you know, because and he's going into a club who hasn't won anything in a long time. So I don't think he can just go in there and click his fingers. And now you've got, whereas when he went to Man United, obviously he went and won the Europa League in his first season, didn't he? And won a cup. And
young players like Rashford have benefited from that.
Yeah, like, I personally like Jose Mourinho. I'm annoyed, but I was a bit annoyed he went to Tottenham. He's a character. Obviously, he gave us that great meme now, isn't it? That great thing when running up to the
place. I was crying. That made me cry.
That was like Sterling or something fouled someone or something, and then his assistant said to him, "Well, you know, he's already on the yellow, like, and they ain't booked him." And then he must have run up and was like, "What are you doing?" He's a great character. But yeah, the thing is, sometimes like he becomes almost bigger than the club. Like he just takes over, and people become more interested in what Jose Mourinho's doing than Tottenham, and then that's, I think, where it can cause problems. So it depends on the ownership. If they can stay the course and stick with him, he might be able to win something.
G, are you concerned that Tottenham, especially with you not signing anybody in the window, and Tottenham having a decent window, are favourites now for the top four spot?
Nah, no, I'm not having that. I mean, the first thing is, you know, as Cellini said, you've got to know the history of Tottenham. but the second thing is I think they needed a striker probably worse than we did, and they didn't get anyone. So, and you know, like, there was, I jokingly said in the WhatsApp group yesterday about, you know, was this a Mourinho masterclass yesterday? And it wasn't a masterclass. It was luck.
It was mad luck.
A smashing
and
grab.
I don't get me wrong.
Why is it luck?
Of course it's luck.
No, I'm asking. I'm just asking.
Because if City take half their chances, the game's over.
No, wait. There's only two chances that for
two.
Me.
Two.
There's only two. That the rest were like, game of football, isn't it? It's how it goes, isn't it? Anyway, sorry,
yeah.
G. Sorry.
No. So yeah, I'm not. Don't get me wrong. Like, I think there's still a lot wrong with what at Chelsea. A lot of things that we can improve on. But I think Tottenham will have as many problems. United will have as many problems.
How many points ahead are you at Tottenham?
We're 4 points ahead of them now.
Is it 4 points? It's so, getting tighter, yeah.
It is getting tighter.
That's why Frank celebrated so hard when they beat us.
He did. He loved it.
So hard. But, he celebrated. He knew.
Not just because of that. Because, yeah. You know, I mean, one of your guys tried to punch him on the pitch. Do you remember in the FA Cup? Do you remember that?
What was that?
Well, I don't remember that. What was that?
In that, one of your, when there was an FA Cup replay, one of your fans ran onto the pitch and tried to punch him when he was celebrating.
Oh, for real?
You don't remember? It was live on BBC.
I can't remember. That,
yeah, of course you don't.
No, funny. When was that?
You remember when it was about 2006, 2007. Jose was in charge.
That's why I can't remember. Two decades ago.
Listen.
He's never forgotten.
Two decades ago.
Don't forget,
man.
He's kept it with him all these years.
So Joel, are you saying that you thought it was a masterclass?
No. I'm not saying it was a masterclass. I'm just like saying it wasn't. That it was a masterclass or City were that woeful in front of goal. It was just a game of football. They don't score all their chances, you know. We're sitting there like they go up front, they attack and they score. They don't go
I can think of the penalty. The Aguero hit.
It's a great save. It was a great save. It's 50-50 on the penalty.
And even the...
They hit the post. That's not on target. You see what I'm saying, though?
Yeah, but...
Do you get me, though?
I remember them having at least two chances before you scored.
See, but most people talk about the penalty and hitting the post. And I'm saying the post ain't the target.
No.
And the penalty was saved.
Didn't Sterling have a chance?
Sterling had a chance. I've even Gundogan had a chance in the second half where
he skied it.
Do you know Liverpool beat us, right? And we had a good few chances to score. I never come out of that thinking that it's a masterclass by Klopp or that they deserve to win. I swear it's a game of football. We had a few chances, didn't score. They had chances, took theirs. That's how it goes.
I think you stole one. And that happens sometimes.
Oh, yeah, true. That happens sometimes. That does happen.
Yeah, it doesn't complain. I don't complain when that happens to us. So
I think Jose is going to prove himself at this club here and change people's opinions of him, especially Jordan's.
I really don't, but we'll
yeah. I think this is
a fan club over here.
Graham Souness said that Jose's style of football now, the best it can do is spoil, you know, for the big teams. He can't actually win or impose himself.
Okay, so how many big teams are we talking about here? Just so I'm clear.
So what at the moment it's Liverpool City.
So there's two big teams. So we must change our style. For two clubs, he must change his style because two other clubs
are in their pump. No, the other teams are doing it well. If you look at like Chelsea and Arsenal,
yeah,
where you know, the other teams are aiming towards that type of football. Aiming towards Jose.
No. You said big clubs are doing it well. There's only two big clubs doing it well.
Okay, but then
so I'm saying the other 18 clubs.
That's true.
Aren't doing that.
Do you want to win?
That doesn't necessarily mean you have to do it like them because they've spent an inordinate amount of money in order to do what they're doing.
That's true, but
and that's what I'm saying. I don't think that pattern of football, because people talk about this all the time, like it's something you can just replicate throughout the league. You can't.
Not without spending that money.
And even if you spend half that money, you won't do it.
But Jose United spent the money and didn't do it.
Jose was the most successful United manager post Alex Ferguson.
Okay, but
he wasn't good enough.
Hold on. How long was he there for?
The 3-4 years.
No, he wasn't there for 4 years. He was there for 3 years. He was the most successful manager post Alex Ferguson. Who's the most successful manager?
But hold on,
because we're talking about standards, isn't it? Right?
Yeah.
We're talking about standards.
Yeah.
He never spent the same type of money that that prepared that the two projects that he's calling big clubs. He hasn't spent that type of money.
I think he spent more money than
Liverpool.
Liverpool?
He spent more money
than Liverpool? I think you need to do your research on that, bruv.
You're saying that Liverpool spent more money in the 3 years that Jose was at United than
No. I'm saying preparing the project, right? So for me, Pep's benefiting from the fact that he went... You remember he had a year hiatus? I've said this on there before. He had a year hiatus before he got to that club. We all knew he was going before that year. This is preparation.
Mm.
You understand what I'm saying? This is talking to the owners. I'm saying from the training ground, the way that the teams are prepared, coming up, the philosophy. I'm saying that they've had time to prep in a way that no other club has. And then they've had that money, that resource. And Klopp was already at Liverpool when Jose got to United, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's had prep time. Jose never got that prep time. They won't be. It's going to be a while before somebody can tell me he's not the most successful.
No, that's a fact.
Man, that's my point. But what I'm trying to say though is people are talking about that football like it can't do anything. Too much emphasis placed on this attacking football that only a few clubs can manifest, and it's not financially viable for any other club to try and shoot for that type of football, because you haven't got the infrastructure, coaching infrastructure to implement it. Club down, top down, you haven't got it. You won't have the prep time. You will not catch those two big clubs. There won't be no more clean teams playing like that. Usopp will try and you will fall short. Because in the meantime, you've got to do what you're doing now. Qualify for the Champions League. Mm-hmm. Look like you're winning trophies. Stay positive. Keep bums on seats. The minute that don't look like you're happening, you're getting rid of your manager.
But what I'm saying is don't get me wrong. At the moment, we are falling well short. But I think Tottenham will fall even shorter. Or should I say, a team managed in the Jose Mourinho way are going to fall even shorter.
Do you think Jose Ball can still win a title?
Jose Ball?
Mm-hmm.
I think Jose Mourinho can win a title, yeah.
No, I disagree. I think his time was the 2000s.
I disagree as well, but we agree to disagree. Speaking about not winning titles, West Ham.
Cheap shot.
Listen, mate, we're going to win the championship next season, mate. The championship, it's ours.
You know what, before we get to West Ham, because I'll let you kind of sit on that for a second. I think we've got a friend of the show and top football journalist from The Athletic on the line, Rafa Honeytime. Rafa, how you doing, my friend?
Good evening, guys. How are you?
We're good. We're just taking the piss out of our West Ham guest here as well, so excuse us for that. I want to rattle through quite a few things with you, Rafa, all German and Germany related. I just want to kind of get your perspective on what's happening with these different things. Let me start off with Haaland, who's made the move to Dortmund, and he's doing an absolute madness. What's going on with him? And is there a pathway for him to be joining Bayern Munich in 2 years' time, and he's just kind of passing through Dortmund before making the step up to a truly elite club?
Well, I mean, first of all, you're right. He's doing a madness. It's 7 in 3 games now, and none of these games have been more than 77 minutes each. So the guy's unbelievable. And he's not 100% fit, by his own admission. He's been eased into this league, into this team, but he might be enough to give Dortmund a viable title race. That's how big this guy's impact has been in terms of the mood, in terms of the atmosphere, the way the Dortmund play as well. So, hands down, easily the best transfer of this window. Now, as far as his future is concerned, it's no secret, even though Dortmund would like to keep it a secret, that he has a release clause. It is around about 100 million euros. Some people say it's a little bit less, 75. Some people say it's a little bit more. It might be dependent on bonus factors, etc., but it's kind of the ballpark. It doesn't kick in before summer 2022, though. There's some information saying it's only the winter of that year, but certainly not before that. So 2 years down the line, then the question is what happens. Now, Bayern might be in a position after Lewandowski is getting on a bit that they think, okay, this is going to be a new big center forward. And because he has a release clause, Dortmund can't necessarily stop him. The thing is, though, the way that this guy is going, he'll have all of Europe looking for a signature, as he has indeed this winter, when United pushed very hard, and Leipzig as well, and Juventus. So, Bayern will be only one of many, many contenders.
We've seen the goals that he scored at his current and previous club, but you watch him a lot more than everybody, more than most. What is it about him that makes him such a bit of a freak? What are his skill sets? What are his attributes? And also, do you ever get concerned that he's almost starting too good or too well too soon? And, you know, in 5-6 years, there could be a burnout, which is what we do see sometimes with, you know, freakish talents that come on the scene at a very young age.
But I think that's where he's been very smart, though, because when he moved from Molde to Salzburg, he could have gone to a bigger club then. He had offers from Leipzig then. He had offers from, I think, Juventus even back then. But they decided, no, let's go from Norway to the Austrian Bundesliga and, again, make a gradual step up from the Austrian Bundesliga to the Bundesliga. So I think if this guy would have been in, you know, Chelsea reserves at 17 or 16, then we might be having a conversation. But because he has been very smartly advised, I don't see that as an issue. Now, as far as his characteristics is concerned, first of all, the guy is made out of sheer muscle. He has like 194 meters Scandinavian muscle, no fat. The guy's super quick, especially for a guy who's quite tall, very, very strong, and he's a complete package. And if anything, you know, centre forwards tend to peak a little bit later. They need to often learn the game and get physical. This guy is already there, or some way down the line to getting there, which explains why everyone wants him.
Is it a fair comparison, not in terms of direct positioning, but a fair comparison to maybe Wayne Rooney, in that very young, built like a man, and has an extremely wide palette of skill sets?
Yes, but this guy's more of a real centre forward.
Okay.
I mean, Rooney was always a second striker, a shadow striker playing off somebody. Of course, you could play him by himself, but he was happier, I think, dropping a little bit deeper, dropping a link-up play. This guy loves making runs. I mean, you have like three or four attacking midfielders. One is Jadon Sancho, by the way, has had an unbelievable season. And they look up and they see Haaland making that run into the box. And, you know, he's already getting so many balls, and he's only going to get more as Dortmund learn how to feed him and learn how to combine with him. And he's a classic number nine, all-round superstar in the making.
Let's go on to now my favourite player in the Premier League, Leroy Sané. What's happening with him? I know he's still currently injured, but are we sensing that he's not going to be, well, he won't play another Premier League game ever?
No, I think he'll come back. He's back in full training now with the team. I think he'll be eased back. I think there's a good chance we might see him in action come the second stages of the Champions League. So 4 or 5 weeks down the line, I think he'll be in a position to play, if not before. There is no bad blood between him and Pep Guardiola as such, but there's also currently not much of a chance of him renewing a deal or signing a new deal. Now, things can change because he has changed his agency a couple of weeks ago, having all but concluded a deal for Bayern, which fell through when he got injured in the Charity Shield. He now has new management who have basically told Bayern and everyone else who might be interested that they have to start from scratch, that every negotiation, everything that's gone before is null and void, and they have to sit down again and listen to what they have to say, which is very annoying for Bayern because they had the deal almost done and opened up the door for whoever else might come in. So he's in a very strong position, having made it known unofficially that he's not going to renew a contract on 2021, almost like a free agent at this point. And Bayern will have their work cut out and have to have deep pockets, I think, to make this happen. But they're still, because of what happened before and the groundwork that they've laid, they're still the favourites to get this over the line. But it's going to be much trickier than it would have been if he hadn't been injured in the summer.
A slightly random one, Ruff. I find Eddie Howe, the Bournemouth manager, quite an interesting situation in terms of he's been there a while. He's a bit of a legend at the club, but it feels like a little bit like maybe Simeone at Atletico, that he's maybe run his course at that club and he's maybe hit a brick wall in terms of moving himself and the club forward. Is someone like Eddie Howe, who I think is a good manager, has flaws but a good manager, is it someone like him, if he was to leave Bournemouth, would he be an option for, you know, like maybe a tier two German club?
Potentially. I mean, not many English managers have come over and done well. The last experience we've had was Steve McClaren, who wasn't exactly
a big
success at Hoffa Wolfsburg. Now, I think in theory it could work. The question is, you know, is Eddie Howe maybe not the English Simeone, but maybe one of those guys who works at one specific club and then, for whatever reason, can't quite see himself being in another club, or flip that on its head. Maybe it's difficult for other clubs to envisage having Eddie Howe coaching them. And I think that's his problem. You know, he's so in line with the club. He and the club are kind of synonymous in people's minds, that I think it's very, very hard to think what would happen if you were to coach, let's say, an Everton or a West Ham even. I think people have been reluctant to take the plunge. And I think what has worked against him, and this is just my personal view, is that he's a little bit light on the charisma. I think people understand that he's a good manager, if not a great manager, when it comes to coaching and getting a lot out of his former team. But the bigger clubs, especially in Europe, but also in the Premier League, they want somebody who's like the face of a club, the figurehead, the leader. And I think people find it a little bit difficult to project that onto Eddie Howe when it comes to sort of slightly bigger clubs with real big ambitions.
Let's go on to Bayern Munich now. The Champions League second phase gets underway quite soon. What are their chances of doing something, pretty special in this season's competition?
I'd say their chances are not bad. I mean, this is a team that's begun to play well again over the last few weeks. They're much happier since Niko Kovac left. They now have in Hansi Flick somebody who is a bit of a novice at this level. He was the assistant of Joachim Löw when they won the World Cup with Germany in 2014. But this is his first big-time job at a club. So far, he's done really well. Bayern are back to their best when it comes to pressing, when it comes to winning the ball back, but also when it comes to having a very structured but at the same time energetic and fast possession football. They are as good, some people are saying, as they were when Pep was there. So a real renaissance, if you will. Is it enough to win the Champions League? I'm not 100% sure, but I think they have a better chance, and certainly a sense that this could be their year. At least to sort of going deep into competition's concerns. So slowly but surely, there is a sense that things are kind of coming together at the right time. They should go past Chelsea unless something dramatic happens. Then, of course, they need a bit of luck. But they feel that they're in a good place going into this last 16.
Just last couple. I've got a West Ham fan in the studio here with me. Haller came in, came from Germany with I saw a little bit of him last year, and there was high hopes from him. What do you think has gone wrong with? I mean, West Ham are not having a great season, so it's hard to perform when you're on a poor team. But what have you seen this season of Haller that you didn't see of last year, or vice versa, should I say?
Yeah, I think there are two things here. First of all, Haller worked really well as part of a three at Frankfurt. You know, they played a very aggressive system with Rebic and Jovic right up against him, and they had three guys bearing down on the opposition at all times. Freddy Bobic, the sporting director, called it the three Buffaloes. And it was, you were up against a herd of strikers. Very unusual system, very tough to deal with, and he had the support and he had bodies around him. It was brilliant. The year before, he was not quite as effective when he was slightly more isolated. And now he's gone from being this guy that has all these strikes around him to being the guy that's the loneliest man on the pitch. Now, you can still, I think, talk about his commitment and maybe he should work harder off the ball and all these things, but he looks like a man who's just thinking, where am I? What is this team? What is this football? And I think it's very, very difficult for any striker to play in such a system where you either just hoof it up front and hope that something sticks, or you try, some guy does something on the sideline and tries to dribble through and then looks for you. But there's no structured attacking play, there's no real support, and I think a lot of strikers, even superstar strikers, would look very lonely in that system that David Moyes is playing.
And just finally, Germany, the Euros are this summer, Rafa. Tough group so far. You've got France and Portugal, and the fourth sides that will come from the playoffs. How are Germany looking in terms of prep, especially off the back of a disappointing World Cup?
It's difficult to say. I mean, they have players. You know, they have players available. There's Sané, there's Werner, there's Havertz, there's Brandt. There's real quality there. The question is, there's Gnabry's work. does it all come together in a way that it certainly didn't at the World Cup? And because there's very little room for error, having France and Portugal, I think it makes it slightly sort of more fraught prospect than it otherwise would be, where they can ease into the tournament. But I still think there is enough quality there to suggest that A, they will get out of the group. And then, you know, you look around, everyone has problems. I think we tend to overestimate the quality of international teams. When you actually see them play, none of them are whole convincing as the best club sides are. And then it comes down to who deals with their shortcomings and deficiencies best. Historically, Germany have done that very well. Of course, they didn't do that at all at the World Cup, but I don't think they'll make the same mistake twice, and I think they will be competitive.
Rafa, cheers for your time, pal. Thanks very much.
Anytime.
Cheers, man. Thank you. Rafa Honigstein there, one of the top, top correspondents and journalists there from The Athletic. Let's pick up with you then, Dan. Hello. He's not been great for you guys. I actually like him, and I do think he, as Rafa was saying, I think it's more about the team that he's in, not recognizing his strengths. What have you made of him, and do you think a lot of it should be blamed on him, and he could be doing a lot more?
I think Rafa was on the money there. He was absolutely spot on, and that's what I've been saying. In fact, I want to get that clip and show it to the other West Ham fans, because it's so divisive right now in terms of Alex. Some people say, yeah, like, he don't work hard enough, he's, you know, he's not good, he's got no pace, this, that and the other. But as I said, like, he wasn't crap before he came to us. So why is it suddenly now he comes to us, oh, it's Alex's crap?
So a lot of the fan base, that they think that he's just not good enough, not trying enough.
Yeah, a mixture of all of those. And it's, you know, as Rafa was saying, it's what I've been saying. Look, we signed him when he plays as part of this system. And now we're trying to make him fit a different system and play as this lone striker. Pellegrini tried to do it. Moyes is trying to do it. And so why are you trying to take this square peg and fit it in the round hole? You know, if you know, like, this is this striker, look at him, he's banging in goals, but you see the way he plays and how the system he plays up, you need a plan to say, either we play that way and we suit to fit him, or we don't sign him and we look at someone who's, you know, who's playing as a lone striker and doing bits, you know. And I feel sorry for him. You can see he's frustrated. Like, you can see the frustration on him. You know, he's a good striker. He scored some really good goals for us, but it's hard.
On West Ham generally, I mean, you've kind of reverted to where you were like a year, 18 months ago. Where are West Ham going? Because you're in trouble. You're not totally clear of the relegation zone. I don't think you'll go, but at the same time, I don't think anyone can say confidently that West Ham will definitely stay up. What's happening with West Ham? You've gone back to Moyes. You've got this big stadium that the fans seem to have accepted, if not, you know, now like, whatever. What's happening? What's going on, Dan? Talk to us.
I think we're going down.
You think going down?
I'm personally looking at the fixtures that we've got left, and just looking at the way we've got a bad run. Some of the other teams have got bad runs, but I can't see. There's not anything about us. We're just a complete shambles. We're a mess. It's crazy. You know, we got in Pellegrini, and, you know, he tried to play a certain type of football, and that I don't think that was only suitable if you've got a Man City or you're in Spain. I don't think it really suited, you know, what we were trying to do. But again, it goes back to Golden Sullivan. And this is the thing, a lot of our opposition fans have been saying lately, you spent 240 million, blah, 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 over the last few years. You know, for one, obviously, talk about net spend, but two, it's how you spend the money. We haven't been spending it wisely. It's just been a scattergun approach, like I said, with Valère. Like, just sign, he's a striker, let's just sign him. Let's just sign, you know, this winger, let's just sign. So you're not looking at having a long-term plan and a system to say, this is how we want to play. This player is going to fit into this slot here, and he's going to be able to link up with this player. So it's just we're a poorly run club. We got one scout on staff. That's it. One scout. So you're expecting him to go now and go and look all around Europe and try and find good players and report back. Our training facilities are, you know, League One standard.
It's a porter cabin still, isn't it?
Yes, this is. It does.
I went there about 3 years ago to do an interview with. It wasn't Pellegrini, it was Bilic when I went down there,
and it was a porter cabin. It was they were everywhere, and that was 3 years ago.
Yeah, you know it looks like you should be learning geography in there, not football.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, it wasn't good.
It's a joke, and they wheel out. They show like, oh look, we've spent you know a couple million on it, but that's like for one. That's not a lot of money on a training ground. Two, that's not even the first team's training ground. It's the under-23's training ground that they keep showing all the pictures of. Like, now our owners are more interested in, like, suing the journalists, banning fans, all of this stuff, than actually coming and doing the right thing.
Do you think if you go down, they'll sell?
I think it's definitely, there's definitely a possibility that they'll sell. I think this is the thing. They're very sensitive, the our owners. There's a lot of this talk that comes out about they don't care. They care about their image and how they're perceived to be, as we've seen with all the, you know, the lawsuit threatening and all of this. They don't like to be seen to be like they're failing.
Mm.
And I think all the protests and things, like, deeply it hurts them, it gets to them. And I think just if they go down, it's going to get worse. I'm telling you, if we go down, that stuff you saw when we lost 3-0 to Burnley, I think you had me on just afterwards.
When the players were on the,
when it
the
just
fans
kicked
were
off,
the
fans was on the pitch, people throwing coins at the owners. It's going to be that times 10 if we go down. So,
G, do you think they're going down? Just
no, I don't think they are. I think there are three teams worse than them.
Who are they? Yeah.
The ones in the bottom three. Yeah.
We're one of them. They're in the bottom three.
Yeah.
We're 18th.
No, I think Norwich will go down.
Norwich is nailed on, I think. I think Norwich is nailed on.
No, Norwich, I mean, who else?
Watford.
Norwich, Watford, West Ham. Villa, Bournemouth, Brighton, Palace. That's how it goes.
I'd probably go for Villa before I went for West Ham. And I don't want to say that as a Chelsea man, but I'll probably go for Villa before I go for West Ham.
Yes.
Joel, what do you reckon? They're gone? And would it be as bad as has been reported?
Do you know what, man? There's no love between West Ham and Tottenham. We all know this. Like, absolutely no love. But I don't like losing London clubs, you know? From the top flight. I like London derbies, not least because I ain't got to go too far to get home, but I love a London derby and I like the West Ham Tottenham love, hate.
Have it in the FA Cup? Hate.
Nah, I'd rather have a Cutler 6 points. They've been poor.
The one team they normally beat is Tottenham.
Well, I mean, you've not done us last year. So it's nice. I think that's what I'm saying. Yeah, we like it. You know what I mean? You come down, you've done us. See, Antonio's taken the mick out of the manager, and we've come down and played you this year. And I tell you what, that was probably the worst West Ham I've ever seen.
Probably been worse teams
than that.
Because that was the thing. I was like, look, if we can't. Even because usually when things are going bad,
you
like
get up for Tottenham.
Yeah, exactly. When you know we don't get up for Tottenham, you know it's bad.
That's what I said. Yeah, the season's not. It's going to be a long season for them. And your crowd, as all your fans, and obviously you've got your purple bit round the side now. And I thought, well, you know, and I could hear purple Tottenham bit. Fans singing. Claret, sorry, you know, I'm winding you up. I could hear the Tottenham fans. You can never hear Tottenham fans singing. So, yeah, they've got to turn it around. And you're right, they definitely care, the Gold and Sullivan, they care. When I saw them put out that documentary about their women's side, I said, yeah, this is a PR. they're on the PR thing right now because they're trying to show everyone we love this club. You know, and
you're not buying it.
I'm not buying it, you know. I just think that they're misguided, man. One scout.
Yeah, they're buying
it. Once in the Premier League.
Yeah, they're buying it. They're
really and hold on. Remember, they don't pay nothing for that stadium, you know.
Mm.
That's why they can spend hundreds of million and it will get it back. You know what I'm saying? That seems to be the attitude that's underpinning their movements.
Yeah.
There's no long-term strategy. They got the stadium and it's literally like what we sing when you come down, when we come down there. You sold your soul. But, you know, so, and there's nothing beyond it. I've not seen any kind, at least with you, like, you bought your stadium, Emirates I'm talking, and there was a plan. And even if the plan was to make sure you make more money than any other club in the Premier League.
There was a plan.
Their plan was the stadium. So they literally thought they'd go to Top Signs, Lacazette, like, look, we've got this stadium, Lacazette. And he'd be like, wow, yeah, on the play there. Like, that was their plan.
Even Payet ran out of there. And I think... That's been the main thing for them. They haven't bought well.
Would you take relegation if it meant they went?
Do you know what? I've said a lot of time. It's no guarantee you'll come back up. But that to me is the silver lining. I feel like a big part of me would take it if it meant they were gone because they're a shambles. Moyes hasn't even got a full backroom staff yet. He tried to employ Stuart Pearce, and they was like, no. Yeah, he criticised us. Mm. And like another one he approached was like, no, I ain't joining that shambles. So we've got like three coaches like behind Moyes. So wow. it's a shambles. But yeah, I'd like to see them gone. And thing is, these big owners are buying championship clubs now.
Mm.
So we could.
You're always going to get. You're always going to be an attractive option for people with money in.
When you're in London,
yeah, that's what I mean.
But were they asked for too much though? Now they've got the stadium and stuff.
That's probably why these men are waiting until they drop.
Yeah.
You know what then, I mean? Then that Saudi contingent will pop up from nowhere.
In one word, or to the United, who's the more attractive proposition to buy, Newcastle or West Ham?
Newcastle.
G.
You know I've got a thing for the Geordies. Newcastle.
In a sentence, why each, Joel?
Because you're going to own St James's Park. You're never going to own that stadium.
You will, trust me.
Wait, 100
because
years?
No. That stadium is losing money.
Yeah.
And if we drop down, we pay half the rent.
Yeah.
They're losing so much money, they're going to get to the point where they have to give it to us or give it to us at a discounted rate. Trust me, they can't afford to keep that stadium.
You won't get that. If you do get it, it will be a huge backlash to that.
It will,
because
but,
it's only 8 years after.
Taxpayers are losing so much money just by them owning it. So it's you save taxpayers' money by not owning it anymore. So.
All right, I've just got a wrap, guys. Just very briefly before we go, a brief update on Fantasy Football League. Singing for Ingram. It's getting tense now, G. Well, you wouldn't know about this because you're down. The top is getting tense. Singing for Ingram is top with a game week of 59 points. He's got a 6-point lead over coach Gerald Lamy, who's in second, and he got a game week of 60 points. I had a game week of 55 points. I'm now 10th. G, you are up, though, to 29th.
Yeah.
With a game week of 59 points.
How many people you got in your league?
Respect me.
50, 60.
Oh, I thought it was like 300. I keep on saying this. I don't know why you're reducing the numbers.
I think it's 40. So you're in the bottom, like, 8 or whatever it is, or that's all for there. So you're not doing very well. Joel, G, Dan, cheers for coming to this week's podcast. Don't forget, once again, subscribe to the podcast. If you haven't already, we're on iTunes, Spotify, Audio Boom, and across all the socials, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Until next week, peace.